You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast brought to you by Nottinghamshire Live.
Hello, welcome to Garibaldi Red. We're back to look ahead to Nottingham Forest versus Fulham under the Friday night lights at the City Ground, although not on TV, and it's this man's fault partly in Michael Temple. Temps, how are you? You've taken over the City on Saturday for the Royal London One Day Cup final, so that's why Forest are on Friday night, isn't it?
Yeah, don't throw that one at my door. This is almost as bad as when I banned that trumpeter from the Ashes in 2013. And I took so much flack. Because I know people love a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff, but yeah, it's been rearranged as not to clash with the One Day Cup final. But if you've got a complaint about that, email Matt Davis. I'm sure he'll pass it on to me.
Yeah, or even better, pay some money, go to Royal London One Day Cup final and fill up Trent Bridge and seek out Temps and give him a piece for your mind. But don't really do that, but do go to the One Day Cup final. It'll be a decent game, I'm sure. Kent versus Lancs at Trent Bridge on Saturday. Temps, no game for Forest versus Leeds in very sad circumstances. We're not going to go into it too much in terms of the rights and the wrongs of postponing matches around, you know, the national mourning for the death of Queen Elizabeth II. What was your call, though? Just working in sport, could you see why it was called off?
Yeah, I'll go into it. I think football got it wrong and cricket got it right. Those that watched the coverage of the cricket would have seen a really emotional but powerful moment where the Oval came to an absolute silence and God Save the King was sung, and a really heartfelt tribute was paid to Queen Elizabeth. So I think football could have... And a lot of kudos from marking the Queen's death in the correct manner with, yeah, tasteful moments at all of the games at the weekend. So it ruined my weekend a little bit, not having the football to look forward to. I think my Sunday game was cancelled, which I don't think Lizzie would have wanted. But I think a lot of kids didn't play at the weekend, and they feel they've been somehow punished and missed the football they've been looking forward to. So look, it's tough, and as a sports administrator, you know, I've made some unpopular decisions in the past as well, and you always do it with the best of intentions. But I really missed football last weekend, and I think it could have contributed to the Queen's memory and also raised the mood of the nation last weekend. So yeah, I missed it, and I really missed the Forest, man.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, especially the kids stuff. Like, kids, yeah, they could have lined up for a minute's silence, for a minute's applause, and taught them a bit of a lesson about respect and learning about the Queen anyway. So, yeah, that was a mistake for me. My weekend was ruined, although it was mental, because my daughter went to a sleepover. She's 8, and yeah, there's like 7 or 8 girls, and they went to sleep at 3:30 a.m., which is just mental, and they were up again at 7 a.m. So it was a fun Sunday picking her up, and then she sang in a choir at the Village Fete. So it was a very, very busy one. And I did miss Forest. No one cares about my personal life. Let's carry on talking football. I mean, this is a little bit cynical, but did it do Forest a favour, do you think, missing a game to get an extra week on the training ground?
I don't think it did anyone a favour, because we'll pay for it with the most intense fixture congestion in the history of the Premier League when we get to the business end. So no, I really don't think it helped out. I'll take the point that after, you know, a really disappointing defeat, there's things that you want to work on. But often the best way to put that behind you is to bomb out of the traps in the next match and put in a performance. So no, I don't think it helped. I hope we see the same reaction in this game on Friday that we were expecting to see at Leeds, because it was so disappointing in the second half against Bournemouth. But we'll come good, we'll improve, you know, as will Fulham. They've had the extra time as well. So yeah, nothing positive for me in losing a round of fixtures from a particularly intensive season, given what's to come in the World Cup.
I suppose we should talk about the 11 and changes we would make, although as we discussed on the last podcast with Greg and Fletch, probably no one knows the best 11 yet, even the manager. But Orel Mangala is one who we've seen back in training. He's put some pictures of himself on social media. Would he be straight back in for you if Dean fit enough?
Yeah, it would for me. So the criticism of the team that Steve picked in the last game was unfounded for all the reasons Fletch said. And I think he articulated himself brilliantly. We don't see anything beyond the performance on the pitch. So everything they've seen in the week, anything going off in their personal lives, any minor injuries, we don't see. So we should trust him on team selection. However, through that lens, I'm suggesting a few changes. So I think that there's a few players that are inked in. Hendo's in goal. I think McKenna and Worrell play. I think Williams and Lodi play. Third centre-half is up for debate. And I'm suggesting debut for Willy Bolly. I think that, by all accounts, he has a slightly different profile to the other players. He's familiar with English football. And I think this is the game to slot him in for. In response to your Mangala question, yeah, if he's fit, he plays for me. And I put O'Brien back in as well. And picking two centre mids is tough because Freuler and Yates probably stake a claim. Koyate was good first half. He did deliver on his brief. He broke up the play. He made the pitch smaller when Bournemouth were in possession and obviously got his goal from the corner. So he can consider himself a little bit unlucky as well. I've put Gibbs White in the 10 role and left out Lingard. And I'm starting with Awoniyi and Johnson up top. Although I think there'll be a few commenters on here that suggest that Emmanuel Dennis should have a go. And I wouldn't be offended if he did. So my 11, Henderson, McKenna, Bolly, Worrell, Lodi and Williams, Mangala and O'Brien centre mid, and Gibbs White in behind Awoniyi and Johnson. Guys on the fringe of that selection, Dennis, Lingard, Freuler, Yates, Koyate, Bade, Cook. But yeah, I don't think that's the team he'll select. But that's the team that I'm picking on based on what I've seen in match action.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I was properly prepared for this, I'd have written down 11 as well. But listening to yours, I think I'd probably go with the same one. Like you, I think there's quite a few 50-50 calls, aren't there, around probably Freuler, who's going to have to start games eventually. And I do think Awoniyi needs to play. I'm not sure Dennis is that focal number nine. We might only have one focal number nine. So a lot of people, like you people, a lot of people are quite down on Brennan at the moment. But to me, he's a moments player, isn't he? I don't think I've said this before. He's not someone who's going to run a game for 90 minutes. He's someone, if you watch the 10 minutes highlights package, a lot of Forest's best work is going to go through him. And he might get shrugged off for the odd 50-50 and stuff like that. But he was doing that last season. It just seems to be magnified for me. What do you think? Am I wrong about Brennan?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. And anybody that thinks that he's going to shine for 90 minutes doesn't really appreciate the nuances of football. There's a lot been said about, you know, Lionel Messi strolls around for 20 minutes, doesn't he? Having a little look where the pockets of space are before he comes alive and exploits it. And how many times have we seen Brennan make a difference in the last 20 minutes of games? The poacher's finish against Everton, the penalty that he took with aplomb, the marginal offside against West Ham with the goal to allow, but he's showing that he has got that quality in front of goal. So I agree completely. If you watch him for 90 minutes, there are going to be times when he drifts out of the game, but he always needs to be watched. He always attracts defenders and he's making things happen and he's learning his trade. This is a guy that's gone from League One to the Championship to the Premier League in no time. And of course, it's going to take him a bit of time to adapt. But yeah, your assessment of that is spot on.
I suppose Lingard's the interesting one, isn't he? Because he's been doing bits and bobs in fits and starts, and he looks a little bit better in some games than others, or progressively better, probably, I'd say. And his fitness is starting to get there, but we haven't seen that kind of end product yet. Where are you at on Lingard? Because I'd have Brennan ahead of him just for this game, but you can see the debate around both players still.
Yeah, I don't think that Brennan is competing with Lingard for a place in the 11. I think Brennan's competing with Dennis, and I think Lingard's competing with Gibbs White, and they're both Gibbs White and Johnson are just winning those battles at this moment in time. I think that Gibbs White was Steve Cooper's number one target, and he's going to back him to play over Lingard if the system is one behind two rather than two behind one, which we spoke about last time around. So this is based on form. I think Gibbs White has just edged himself ahead of Jesse Lingard. Lingard will be back in the team at some point, and it won't be a surprise if he gets a start on Friday night. I've just got Gibbs White just ahead of him. I think he just needs to show a little bit more to be an automatic starter.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Definitely not the three together then for you. You think Awoniyi sort of has to start through the middle?
I think so. Just offers that little bit of difference, doesn't he? Does compete for the ball. And we spoke about Man City, which is a bit of a moot point, really, because of how good they are. But if you're going to play three players of that profile at the top end of the pitch, you can't then play the long ball. And there have been times when we've been under so much pressure that we need to play the long ball. And to do that, I think you need Awoniyi up top. So, yeah, I want to see him start. Now, look, last time Steve Cooper had a free selection at home, he picked the three dribblers rather than the physical presence. So I'm not in his head, and I'm not sure whether he's going to double down on that, having had more time on the training ground, as you say, and reaffirm the instinct that he had last time he picked a team at home. But I'd like to see Awoniyi. I just think he offers something different. I think the supporters are calling for it. And I think that we've seen enough to know that a settled Awoniyi could be a potent force in this league. He's just got that different profile to the other two. The other three, and gives us an opportunity to retain the ball higher up the field, get the runners off him, get the midfield bombing through, and making us a little bit more effective in front of the goal, because we aren't scoring enough at the minute.
Mm. And his best work as well, from watching highlights of him, is not necessarily back to goal anyway. He's a runner in behind as well. So you would still hope that with the right service that he's going to come good with players playing those through balls for him anyway. Talking of focal number nine, we should talk about Fulham, there is a trend at the moment for these big number nines, obviously Haaland, but Ivan Toney as well, and Alexander Mitrovic, who's made this amazing start to the season. And he was unbelievable in the Championship last term. My question was, to what extent are you worried about Mitrovic? I didn't use quite those words in the notes, but how big a threat is he?
Well, look, he's not as big a threat as Kane or Haaland, is he? I think he's disproved the adage that he's a baller in the Championship, but he can't quite live with the Premier League. I think that the start he's made to this season shows that he's adapted his game, and he looks a different player to what he was last time he was up here with Fulham, and certainly a different player to how he handled the Premier League with Newcastle. So he's a good player, but every single team we're coming up against is going to have, you know, a big presence up top, a goal-scoring threat up top. But we shouldn't be worried, concerned, making any particular preparation for Mitrovic, having already faced Kane and Haaland, who I think are the two most dangerous strikers in the division. Respect him, be mindful of his strengths, but yeah, ultimately, I think McKenna did a decent job on him last season, and I think we can keep him. I think we can keep him quiet, Matt. I my prediction for this game is a bold one, but I think we'll win the game 2-0.
To nil. Wow. Okay. Mitrovic is in my FPL team, so I was hoping for a 2-1. But you would hope that as Championship defenders last season, McKenna and Worrell know what that battle is and they'll be ready for it. And I play Bolly as well. Mm. They've got to make a decision on this third centre-half, haven't they, really? They can't keep going back and forth on Cook now, can they?
No, I don't think so. I've spoken a lot about Worrell and McKenna being inked in for me. And I read as much as you do about fan opinion and about what those players are and aren't. But I think once adapted, the captain of this football club, who sets the right tone in the dressing room, has the respect of the fans and is adapting to a way that he has to play in the Premier League, is going to retain his place. I don't think he's under any pressure for his place at this moment in time. McKenna made an horrendous mistake in the last game. That happens. He'll learn for it. Next time, that's going over the Brian Clough stand rather than back to the keeper. So those two keep the place for me. But yeah, we've just got this, not an embarrassment of riches, we've got a decision to make between a group of players that don't seem to have an obvious right to start football games at the minute. Bolly, we know Koyate can play there. We hope Bardet is a slightly different option again. And whilst we'd probably suggested that Cook would fall out of the team before, he came back in, didn't he? And Cooper obviously still sees something there that he likes, probably the experience and the leadership. But yeah, I don't think, having signed those players, Cook's going to retain that spot. I think we're going to see McKenna, Worrell and one other on Friday night. And for me, Bolly's the one for first dibs. You're going to remind me. You're going to play a clip, aren't you, when we don't win till on Friday? That clip's going to come back to haunt me, isn't it?
Are you free on Monday? It might do if you're free on Monday, certainly. Yeah, I think obviously Niakate is the one, isn't he, when he's back? We'll wait and see, but he's been excellent. Any extra importance on this game, do you think? With the Bournemouth result now festering for that extra week, and now we've got an international break, you don't want to carry negative momentum for another 2 weeks, do you?
Yeah, wins relieve pressure and defeats exacerbate pressure, don't they? So I think if we'd have held on to the lead against Bournemouth, less pressure. I've seen phrases like must win being bounded around for this game, which is ridiculous. Still grown into our own skin. It's a game we'd want to win, and it's a game we'd target winning, having signed the amount of players that we have, and yeah, having the same aspiration as Fulham to stay in this division. So yeah, we lost the last game, so there's more importance on this one. We spoke, didn't we, last year about that journey from relegation after eight games to safety to mid-table obscurity and climbing the earning the right to climb the table, and we've got to do that again now. So yeah, it's a home game. We've got to try and win it.
Yeah, and one of the things that they have been good at under Cooper is bouncing back from negative results. Obviously, there haven't been many, but I remember, which game was it? Was it Cardiff away or something? I thought they were poor, and he didn't pick the right team necessarily. They bounced straight back, so hopefully we'll see that again. I mean, talking of Cooper, the last topic I wanted to talk about with just the two of us was around Brighton. There's now, you know, speculation now that Potter's gone, that they might turn to Cooper. I said to you, it kind of highlights to me that it sharpens our mind as to how good a manager Cooper is, doesn't it?
Yes, I'll say this. Steve Cooper is extremely employable, and he's proved himself beyond doubt at the FA with age groups, running the academy at Liverpool, in the Championship with Swansea and Forest, and I hope now in the Premier League that he's here to stay, on this stage to stay. And at some point, he's going to fall out of Forest, either by getting the chop or moving on his own terms. I hope it's no time soon, because I think what he's done has been refreshing, impressive, his character, his style, everything. I'm a massive fan of. But he's employable. And Chris Hughton and Billy Davis fell out of this football club and haven't been deemed employable in this market. So I'm not surprised that he's being linked with clubs like Brighton, when there's a calm, clear philosophy where they take a chance on a coach like Potter, who, you know, came from obscure European background, did his hard yards, didn't he, in those leagues, and his CV's unbelievably good. He took the stairs rather than the lift, earned his stripes, and now he's at Chelsea, which is a money project with a squad of players that would be the envy of anybody in world football. So yeah, we should be grateful for what we've got with Steve Cooper, and I'm not surprised he's being spoken about as a potential replacement at an established Premiership club, because that's what Brighton are now. I don't think he'll go. But yeah, I suppose I'm slightly perturbed that he still hasn't signed his contract extension, and that should be a priority for me in the weeks ahead, to demonstrate the form that gives him the and ultimately to commit to Forest. What do you think? Do you think there's a chance that he could jump if it was offered?
There's a lot of Forest fans on Twitter, aren't there? Like, why would he go there? And if I, you know, I'm not every Forest fan will like me for this, but I think, you know, Brighton are a very good football club. They're well run. They give coaches a lot of time. Cooper did it with Cooper. Potter didn't set the world alight straight away at Brighton. He made them a mid-table team. And they've made this gradual incremental progression. I'm not sure he's going to get at Chelsea, but, you know, if they do, I think they'll do very well. And I think Forest should follow the Brighton example and actually give Cooper this incremental time to progress. Obviously, we haven't seen that this summer. They've thrown a lot at it, but I hope they do that in time and back him and Forest follow this Brighton mould. And on Cooper going to Brighton, I mean, it's a very attractive job. I hope he doesn't go if he is offered the opportunity, because there's a lot to like at Forest as well. There's two very attractive projects doing things slightly different ways, a slightly different phase of their progression. I suppose Cooper would have to think, what can he take to Brighton, or how far can he take Brighton, how far can he take Forest? Brighton are probably at the ceiling of where they are now, aren't they? What's Forest's ceiling, do you think?
I think, so just a slightly different point, I think generally there's a lot of pride to be had in being part of something you've created. And he's created this situation at Forest. He's bonded with the players. He's bonded with the fans. I think that stands for a lot. Brighton expect to finish above Forest this season. So, yeah, at this moment in time, if you were neutral and didn't have any kind of history with either club, it's the one you would jump for. However, I think that one of the overriding factors is that Steve Cooper dragged us from the bottom of the Championship to this point and wants to see the job through. And I think more than anything else, that will stand Forrest and Cooper in good stead. He created this scenario. He's earned the right to maintain our standing. And walking through the door at Brighton, the first thing he'd have to do is what any coach should do when they walk in anywhere, which is deride the balance of the squad, buy yourself time and spend a couple of transfer windows getting people in through one door and out through another. So, yeah, let's hope we haven't got that conundrum to solve in the next few weeks.
No, I agree. I think Forest are a bigger football club, just to finish on this. I mean, you see the atmosphere at games and you see the interest around Nottingham Forest and the players they've been able to attract as a newly promoted club. And, yeah, what other club has been able to attract players of this calibre since coming back to the Premier League? Maybe Villa, I don't know. Leeds, to an extent, got Rafinha and Llorente, but I think Forest have gone a step past that in a sense with, you know, Lingard and Lodi and Dean Henderson and players like that. So I think Forest are the bigger football club. Brighton are probably in a couple of steps further along the journey. So it'd be an interesting one. Hopefully it doesn't come to that and Brighton look elsewhere and Cooper's not put in the position, or Forest aren't, you know, put in the position they have to say no to him, or however it plays out. I hope they look elsewhere, but it's certainly interesting times and it shows what a great job he's done. Right. Anything you want to add, Temps, before we go?
No, I don't think so. Really looking forward to the game. Yeah, let's get stuck in. Let's get behind them. Let's hope we assert ourselves on it, play attacking football. And regardless of the selection, let's respect the fact that Steve Cooper and the team are armed with far more information than we are. They're trying to win football matches, and we can play our bit by staying in their corner. I think that, yeah, look, I'll say it. Some of the reaction at the last game was unhelpful, if not unwarranted. And the best chance we've got of winning this game is creating that atmosphere that was there at the West Ham game. And was there at the Spurs game. Let's stay behind the team and get this one done on Friday.
So what I'm hoping happens now is, if my video editing skills are up to scratch, we're going to go into a video with another Matt from the Fulham Focus podcast and get his thoughts on their side of the game, although I haven't spoken to him yet as I record this. So if it all comes together, you'll hear from Matt, and then we shall be back on Monday. Delighted to be joined by Matt from the Fulham Focus podcast to get an opposition perspective heading into Friday night's game. Matt, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. Enjoying our start to the season, so it's not going bad. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. I was saying before we started recording, we did another one of these with a Bournemouth fan, and I predicted initially, I did change my mind, but I initially predicted Fulham would go down based solely on Tim Ream, partly exaggerating, but I couldn't believe, like, you could stay up with him in the Premier League again. But I mean, we might mention him, but him and Fulham perhaps have exceeded all expectations, I guess. How's it been for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we went into that Liverpool game probably expecting to get thumped. You know, look at their players, you look at ours, a few new signings, Tim Ream expected to start at the back. And on paper, you panic and you think we're not ready for the Premier League. We go into it and we could have won the game, come out of a draw, and it still felt like a win. And then, you know, a couple of wins against Brentford last minute. Arguably, we should have won that game anyway because we were 2-0 up. And then beating Brighton, who were unbeaten at the time as well. It's a big win. And then we've really shown up against Tottenham and Arsenal, both away, both are unbeaten, I believe, in the league. And, you know, we're really just, it just looks good. It feels good as well. We've adapted our style to the Premier League this time. We're less on the ball. We're trying to counter-attack a bit more. We've come into the Premier League and tried to play our Championship style before, and it's not worked. So we're adapting and we're, you know, getting used to the opposition. And I mean, to be on 8 points after six games is a miracle, really. I didn't expect it before the start of the season. So I'm really happy.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons myself and probably a few fans were doubting Fulham was the manager, whether he could be tactically adept enough to cut it in the Premier League after some ups and downs. But it sounds like he deserves a lot of credit then.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. He's got a tune out of Mitrovic, who I'm sure we'll come on to later. But he's brought in his players. Previously, it's been the owner or the director of football, his stat pad. So, you know, Silva's really making it his team. He's got a lot of Portuguese or Portuguese-speaking players in. We've not spent too much, which is a positive, I suppose, in a way. We spent 100 million before and gone down. But he's putting his stamp on it, and it just, the club just feels united. All the players, they feel like they're a unit and they get on. And the players have been bought in to improve rather than replace. I think that's a key thing for us over the summer. And we needed some backup, and eventually we managed to get it. But it's been brilliant. He's really put his mark on it, Marco Silva. And full credit to him. This is down to him so far, but, you know, has to continue. That's the main thing.
We'll come on to Mitrovic, as you say, in a minute. What's the Fulham take on the ownership? Because, you know, Shad Khan's a very wealthy man. Tony Khan seems to have his fingers in an NFL team and a massive interest in a wrestling promotion. And Fulham don't seem to be the main focus of the three from an outsider looking in. How do Fulham fans view the ownership?
I think, you know, it's great that they're spending money. It's clear to see that Shahid Khan is putting his money in his pocket. There's no denying that. But I've said it a lot. Tony Khan either cares or he doesn't. There's no way anyone doing three jobs like that will manage it. It's impossible. We've got other people at the club, such as Alistair McIntosh. I've had my opinion on him, who I don't rate. I think he's the seventh highest paid CEO in the Premier League for some reason. I don't know why. Don't really know what he does. And some of the transfers in previous years have been an absolute disaster. Some of them have been brilliant. But it's very hit and miss. This year, as I say, Silva's spin on it, it seems like we're more of a team. We're not just picking out players like you would on Football Manager, for example. That is how it's felt in previous years. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, as I've said, Khan either cares or he doesn't. That's Tony Khan. In my opinion, I think he should go focus on his wrestling, focus on his NFL, which I don't even think he cares about either. I think it's all about the wrestling. So, you know, get someone in who cares about the club, and hopefully we'll start to see an upwards trajectory. But, you know, we're doing all right so far, so I can't really complain.
Yeah, I mean, on the pitch, is it all Mitrovic? I get the sense the whole team's geared around him, which makes a lot of sense. It can't be a one-man act, though, can it?
No, I don't think it is, but I do get the sense that if he got injured, we would be a little bit buggered at the same time. You know, everyone puts the effort in, everyone's creating chances, but he is, at the end of the day, he's there to finish your chances off. If you put most of the players in the position where he was to head that goal in against Brentford, most of them would have missed it. So, you know, you have him for the big moments, got us back in it against Spurs with a great finish. You know, 6-6 is crucial. We've signed Carlos Vinicius, who didn't get much of a chance at Spurs in the Premier League, but he's a solid backup. However, you look at it and I go, if Mitrovic was out for 4 weeks, can I see Vinicius hitting the same sort of form? No, but he only played 5 minutes last time out against Spurs, so I can't really judge him yet. He could prove me wrong and that would be fantastic. But yeah, we're going to be reliant on Mitrovic's goals. But in terms of all-round play, we've got the players for it. Just need that bloke to finish it off.
Who are you looking at then? Poligny and Pereira, maybe the ones? Are there more to it?
Yeah, I'd say so. And we've still got Harry Wilson to come back, who I think will be key. Manos Solomon out injured until January, unfortunately, which is a massive loss. But, you know, they're just going to create chances. We've got Willian as a backup. If, you know, it's a solid option, really. Risk-free, 34, one-year deal. Dan James on loan, but, you know, another good signing on loan, risk-free again. So, you know, we're covered. We're covered all in the wings, especially. We're going to have six wingers by the time all of them are fit. Which is great, but how do you keep that many wingers happy is my only concern. Do you maybe move one into the 10? But then you've got Pereira there who is, you know, being fantastic. Saw a lot of United fans giving him stick when we signed him, but he has just been brilliant. He works hard, he cares, his ability is brilliant, and his dead balls are just ridiculous. We've not had that for a long time. So anytime he takes a set piece, you feel like we're a threat from them. You know, Polina's tall, got toes in, Ring can win a header. You know, I think we're sorted all over the pitch and we've got different variations to our play now. It's fantastic to see.
How are you and Fulham fans seeing this game on Friday night then? Do you feel like it's not a big opportunity or would you take a point?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because if you're looking at it from a perspective across the whole season, I think it's fair to say that, you know, we're both going to be fighting for points. So both teams are going to be looking at this as we need 3 points here because there's not going to be that many better opportunities. But, you know, I've watched Forest play a few times this season and they look really good. On the whole, a point probably would be a decent result at the end of the day. I know how loud the City ground can be. Yeah, I've been there. I went there last season and, you know, it was loud. And the players that you've got are going to want to prove a point. You know, it's a long season and this is a good opportunity for Forest to try and get 3 points here and build some momentum. So, you know, the team, the fans, they're going to be well up for it. But we need to adapt to that and we need to try and, you know, kill the game a little bit. You know, just put our stamp on it. And then, you know, we need the 3 points as much as anyone. We need to be working towards that 40-point goal. Same as any team that wants to stay up. That is the ultimate goal. So if we can get as many points as we can early on, it takes the pressure a little bit off of, you know, February, March time. You're not sort of scrambling for the points towards the end of the season. But Spurs was a free hit and Chelsea potentially would have been. But this is a massive game, certainly from our side. We do really need to take 3 points here. And 11 after 7, I think, is a good return.
Yeah, Forest were in a very similar position against Bournemouth. If they won that game, they'd be 7 after 6. So it shows, yeah, these are big games that can swing the pendulum pretty massively. Anyone that you're looking at from the Forest team that worries you at all?
I mean, I'm trying to keep up with all the signings. But Gibbs White, obviously, we've played against him already this season when he played for Wolves. And, you know, he looks a good player. He's so good on the ball. And he gave us a run around when he was at Sheffield United last year. So, you know, we know how good he can be. He's a very, very good player. Lingard as well, of course, on his day, he can be absolutely fantastic. That's a really good signing, really shrewd signing. So, you know, there's players all over the pitch for Forest. Nico Williams, of course, spent second half of last season on loan with us. Be interesting to see how he plays, especially now he's playing wing back. He was just a, you know, fullback for us last season. He's going to be bang up for it as well. Probably want to get one over on us, even though it was all very amicable. And we liked him and he liked us, I like to think. So, but it'll just be good to see how he plays as well. But, you know, Forest have got quality all over the pitch. There's no denying that. Signed a lot of international players and spent the money. So it's going to be a tough game for us. And that's the thing as well. There's an element of doubt to it because we don't know how your team is going to play because there's only so much scouting you can do of a new team, which is the reality of it. So they're going to be well up for it and they're going to see it as 3 points, you know, a big 3 points if you can get it.
Yeah, well, it should be a good game, hopefully so. And I wish Fulham the best of luck for the rest of the season, apart from the two games against Forest. But good to see them stay up and Mitrovic prove himself and Silva. So thanks for joining us, Matt, and hope you enjoy the game. Are you going?
I am going, yeah. I'll be there on Friday night. We're staying up because, yeah, Friday night game is a bit of a kick in the teeth. But no, it'll be a good, be good. Be good to go back.
Excellent, excellent. We'll be back on Monday. Not sure who with, but we'll be reviewing the game as normal. And as I say, hopefully it's a good night for the Reds. Get back on track. But in the meantime, thanks very much and we'll see you soon.